When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
I am fine. How are you?
I'm good, too. Oh, fine, too. I should say, you didn't say good. You said fine. I'm fine, too.
Superman does good. Mm. You are doing good. What? Is that
what?
It? That's not it. I completely ruined that, didn't I?
Yeah. Oh,
something about good. Anyway, I'm well.
Well, that's fantastic news. I'm pleased to hear it.
It is. This video game podcast that we do is a video game podcast in which we talk about video game things. If you've not been here before, I mean, you could be confused by the name, I suppose, but I don't know. Would you?
It could be an athletics podcast, couldn't it?
It could be. It's not. We're making that clear. We still get occasional tweets from athletes sort of tagging us in several... with a bunch of several other people on Twitter about their latest jump that they've done.
Their PB.
Yeah, look at my big jump. Yeah. And it's like, that is undoubtedly a very impressive and big jump, but I don't know what do we do here?
The only PBs here are Peter and Ben.
Yeah. What? Yeah, it is. So, yeah, video game podcast. We've got sponsors each and every week. I don't know if you knew that as well, if you're new. We've got a brand new sponsor. For some reason, we can't hold on to our sort of video game relevant. That's it. My brain's not on yet today.
It's okay.
It's not woken up.
Don't worry about it.
Video game relevant sponsor, and we get one of those each and every week because we can't hold one down. They don't stick around, and it's really strange.
I don't know why. Yeah.
Very bizarre, but Peter's got one there for this week.
This one's very video game relevant in that it's actually a new game that's coming out.
Oh, nice.
I think it's coming out this month. I'm told, according to the ad brief here, it's a game that's designed to celebrate the people in the background, you know, of games and TV shows and movies, sort of the extras. The people who don't even have character names in the credits, you know, they're just called, like, Man One or like Lady Three,
passerby,
yeah, hot dog salesman.
Have you seen the? Sorry to completely take you.
That's okay.
Off on a side adventure.
Take me, please.
Have you seen the IMDb page for the woman whose only credit is woman who wets herself?
No, I've not. Okay, wow.
Let me see if I can find it.
What film is it in?
Who wets herself? I haven't looked at it for about 10 years, I'm sure. Anne Sellers. There we go. Right, her name is Anne Sellers.
Mm.
She's been in one TV movie called Threads from 1984, and it's uncredited, and she is Woman Who Urinates on Herself.
On herself.
This is it. This is her. She was born in 1952 in Sheffield. A clever and creative child, she excelled at school. Her love of theatre and cinema led her to go on to study drama. Her love of children, her fun-loving nature, and her desire and willingness to encourage others' potential led her to take her drama education and her extracurricular knowledge of the C-full bio. And then she's got one credit, which isn't really a credit.
Wait, why has she got a whole bio written for her if she's only wet herself in Threads, was it called?
In 1984, yeah.
Anne Sellers, there she is. And that must be a photo from the film in which she wets
maybe
herself.
Maybe that's the exact moment.
It could be. She looks like she probably is doing right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, she passed away in 2015. A legend. This is the first I'm hearing of this, because as I said, I haven't checked for a while, but...
Oh, she was born in 1952, so...
So this is what you're talking about, though, like woman who urinates on herself in the credits. That's the kind of
exactly
caliber, yeah?
Yeah, so there's this new game coming out to celebrate those sorts of characters. So they pick one. They pick one at random. They chose for the antagonist of the game. Mm. It's Man 3 from Iron Man, the first Iron Man film. There's just a man in a crowd somewhere. He's called Man 3. So your whole goal in the game is to hunt down this antagonist and just whack him. Just whack him right in the face. You know,
just whack him.
That's all you're going for. Coming soon, this month, I believe, Hit Man 3.
Oh, wow.
You have to be careful how you say it, because actually I'm told that there's like another game coming out that's like legally similar.
Yeah.
So if you do the sort of the staccato wrong, it can sound like something else.
Hitman 3, you don't want that.
Oh yeah, that's it.
That's the one, 3. Right? Yeah, that's it. Did but you know that Hitman 3 has been having some problems because all the reviews went live, I think, on Inauguration Day or the day before?
Oh, right.
So there was just Hitman reviews trending all over Twitter and stuff.
Oh, God.
which I think caused a few issues. But this isn't that. It's not
caused
that
a bit of a panic.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
You've got to hit Man 3.
Man 3. In fact, there might even be a hash symbol before the 3. You know, like I think in America they call it a pound. Pound.
Right. Didn't we used to call it pound signs as well in a long time ago?
Maybe. I think we did also call it hash before it became hashtag. But yes. Yeah.
I never know what to call it now when I'm describing that symbol, you know, to people who aren't our age, because I just sort of expect an eye roll, you know.
I sort of replace it with the word number often.
Yes, yeah. See, that's good. That's clever.
Hitman number 3 is coming
Hitman
soon.
Hitman small noughts and crosses game.
Yeah.
Layout 3.
That hasn't been started yet. There's no noughts and crosses on it.
No noughts and crosses in it yet.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So Hitman 3, very exciting sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to playing that.
Yeah, me too.
Sounds great.
Can't wait to get that guy from Iron Man.
I've got lots of Man 3 merchandise, posters and the like, yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm a huge fan.
All right, well. Oh, by the way, it's not real. Anyway.
What? No, come on, stop it. Is it not?
No, it's not. I'm sorry.
Oh,
sorry.
Bugger, you really got me there.
I really got you there.
I thought it was real.
Oh, well, it's not. It's
damn
not.
It.
Man 3 isn't even real. I've checked Iron Man credits.
It only goes up to 2, doesn't it?
Yeah, and then it goes, there's number 4 for some reason. But they didn't even have a third man in Iron Man.
Just skips it entirely.
I think maybe the third man was Iron Man, so he's credited as Iron Man. Mm. I don't know why 2 background extras got top billing over Tony Stark, but, you know, it happens, I guess.
That's just how it goes sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is just how it goes. No, this isn't a real sponsor. Of course, our actual sponsor, as it is each and every week, are the wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where we have loads of tiers available that you can support us financially at. The lowest tier, $1, gets you access to asking questions on this podcast. So why wouldn't you consider maybe doing that?
Yeah, what? Why not?
Why go do that? All the questions we've got this week come from the patrons who support us there. So if you want to get involved, consider doing that. patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Where are we walking today?
We are walking... maybe across some sort of... if there is a copyright-free one out there that's not on like Associated Press, maybe just a photo of the inauguration or Capitol Hill or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? It's a cause for celebration.
Topical.
We haven't had many of those.
No.
So, yeah, I say go for it. That sounds nice.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. It's welcome to the inauguration special episode. Team Triple Jump will be answering inauguration-related questions today, and we hope you enjoy it.
This is the last time we'll be talking about it for this episode.
Yeah,
so
that's it.
We hope you've enjoyed that too. Peter, who's our first question from?
This question is from Robert Mansell.
Mm.
And Robert says, how do you feel about grinding type moments in games? Sometimes games require you to grind or do repetitive tasks to achieve something. For example, trying to hatch shiny Pokemon or leveling up in an RPG because an area is just too difficult or unbalanced. Does this ruin a game for you? I currently want a team of shiny Pokemon in Pokemon Sword, but I don't have the patience to do it. Are there any games you've quit playing because of grinding? Sorry if this is a mess of words. Love you both and your team. And then at the end it says Kes Kes instead of Kis Kis. But I like Kes Kes.
Yes, that's the name of, what's his name?
The Kestrel in,
yes,
in Kes.
Craig David's Kestrel from, what's it called? What's that show called?
Bo Selector.
Yeah. Selector. You remember Bo Selector?
I never really watched it. Does he have a Kestrel?
Yeah.
Called Kes.
A Kestrel, he called it Arkez.
Arkez. Oh, well, yeah. It's from the film Kes, I guess. And maybe is it a book as well? I don't know.
Oh, I have no idea. See, you're beyond where my knowledge ends, which is Bo Selector on most things.
It's about a northern boy with a Kestrel, so I guess it's a sort of reference to that.
It's Bo Selector, yeah, that's it. Same show.
That's it. It's Craig David. So, I mean, for me, to an extent, it depends on the game. I think it just kind of depends on whether the grind is actually fun, because it can be. You know, sometimes a grind is only a grind in so much as you are doing the same thing over and over in order to achieve for the greater good. Mm. But you can enjoy doing that, and in that sense, it's not a grind because it doesn't feel like a chore, you know? So, for example, you know, I used to grind in MMOs, but, you know, as much as anything else, I just liked going out into an instance with some friends in, like, my guild or whatever, and just, you know, just, like, chat to them while we just walked around, like, attacking loads of medium enemies. You know, I used to play a bit of Guild Wars back in the day. I did play RuneScape as well, but not I never really did any quests or anything. I just used to run around and talk to people like it was Club Penguin or Habbo Hotel.
So
in MMOs I didn't mind doing it because I would just kind of chat to my friends and stuff. And in something like in Battlefront 2, which I know I talk about quite a lot, you have to do a lot in that game, particularly when you first start, to unlock heroes and stuff, which was the whole source of the controversy around it. But also, you know, it's got a progression system where you unlock weapons over time. Like, the more you level up in each class, then, like, eventually other weapons become available to you. And I do that not even necessarily to, like, unlock certain things, although I do, you know, I have things in mind where I'm like, oh, that would be quite nice to unlock that eventually. But I'm doing it because I want to play the game. And the whole point of the game is to go out and just, like, have some FPS matches against people and, you know, just play the game. And so whether that even counts as a grind, I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm doing it partly with the goal in mind to unlock some new stuff, but I'm just having fun. I'm just playing the game as I would be. So outside of that, I can't really think of that many games that I've played that are super grindy. You know, I don't know about you, if you've played a lot or not many.
Well, a lot of games have grinding sort of built in, unless you're some kind of god at the game. Although sometimes the games don't even allow for skill to have any or play any part in how you get on. For example, I've been playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and I'll talk about it more, obviously, in a minute.
Yeah.
But there are bits in that where, you know, just around the corner from your settlement, there's a raid you can do and you can run up and try and get the gold, but everyone's a far higher level than you. And it basically says, no, don't come here yet. But then part of me thinks, well, what the hell is it doing here?
Yeah, why is it placed so close?
What's going on with the flow of this game where I feel like I'm here getting frustrated that, like, an errant arrow is taking my entire health bar off from an enemy I can't see when I've cleared out most of the thing very carefully, you know, running away and healing up and coming back and reviving my allies off the floor and stuff like that. And then, whoop, one arrow and here's a terrible checkpoint, time to do it all again.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like stuff like that. And sometimes grinding, you know, is the only way to come back and do that, but you have to do it later on. Bloodborne and Dark Souls and stuff like that, it's encouraged that you grind at least a little bit to level up and stuff. But as proven by a multitude of people, especially speedrunners, you don't have to be a very high level to absolutely, you know, turn those games into mincemeat, basically, and fly through them. So grinding isn't always necessary. But I used to grind a lot in Pokemon, leveling up my party, especially in the opening areas before I moved on, and then inevitably just settled on using one Pokemon for the rest of the run.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, once you start leveling them up, they're pretty much unbeatable. So I don't think grinding ruins games necessarily. And I think it depends on the context. And sometimes you sort of know what you're getting into with a game that requires grinding. For example, the shiny Pokemon in Pokemon isn't necessary to the game. You know, you don't need shiny Pokemon to finish a Pokemon game. That's just a cosmetic flex to show that you've put in the time.
Yeah.
And while it's irritating that it's entirely random and there's a small chance of you getting them and it takes forever, it's not necessary. Whereas in a game like RuneScape, for example, as you said, you do need to level up. And I used to do a lot of grinding in RuneScape too. But that's pretty much all you do in that game is just level up your skills. That's it, pretty much. And then you pick quests that you want to do based on the amount of XP they give you for certain categories. So I don't think grinding ruins games. I think some games do grinding better than others. Some games it's just vital that you do it. Some games it's encouraged, but you don't need to. But, man, I want the option of still being able, like, standing a chance at succeeding without grinding, you know? Through skill or tactics or whatever. Like, theoretically, with Pokemon, I mean, if you go in there with a level 5 Pokemon against a level 40 Pokemon, you're going to lose. But if you go in there with a level 30 Pokemon and you have the right moves, and you play tactically, and you play to the opponent's weaknesses and stuff, you stand a very good chance of winning.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that, rather than just being, you need to be this number to do this thing. Mm-hmm. And that's less fun.
Yeah, I mean, I guess part of the reason why I feel like I don't play that many games that feature grinding is that, again, I don't feel like I'm doing it all the time. Like, so for example, I've played Assassin's Creed Valhalla, but I didn't kind of, although I would encounter things where I thought, oh man, well, that's for later. I would then just think, well, I'll just continue with like the main quest, or I'll go and do some side quests, or I'll do some exploration. And, you know, it's almost incidental that you level up and start, you know, you get better as the game goes on. And yeah, that is kind of what grinding is, but I kind of, to me, grinding has a connotation about it as well, that you're kind of doing something that you wouldn't necessarily choose to do, but you're doing it so that you can, you know, get better, or so that your character can improve. I guess I try and play games where possible in a way that I don't feel like I'm doing that to myself. I just, I tell myself that, well, I'm just playing the game because I want to, and I'm, you know, I want to do these quests, these side quests, or I want to go and explore and attack some enemies and stuff, and, you know, and I'm just gaining XP as I do it. So, yeah, there's probably actually a few that I can't even think of because I just don't have that label in my head. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to know how much grinding I've done without even kind of realizing that I'm doing it. But I guess that's the attitude. If you're playing a game like that, just sort of try and do it in that way that, you know, it doesn't feel like a chore. Just enjoy it find some enjoyment where you can, I guess.
Yeah. I suppose the definition of grinding it varies as well. Like, I've definitely grinded for trophies before, where you know I'm either endlessly attempting a task to try and succeed, for example, that ridiculous trial run in Sackboy.
Yeah.
Or just going around collecting things or getting a certain amount of kills in a certain way to fulfill criteria, etc., that sort of stuff. But also, you know, certain games, I think, just by their very nature, sort of become a grind. in the end game. Marvel's Avengers, for example, when I played that for a little bit beyond the story ending, like, there was no story there, not really. It was so minimal that all the new missions I was playing were literally just to level up my character. And at that point, I suppose, by definition, it pretty much was just grinding. I was just there mindlessly playing through these tedious, repetitive missions that were new to my character, but not really anything I had to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I could just stick on a podcast or music, and it was just busy work, really.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever quit a game, you know, or just left a game alone forever because of grinding.
And I guess almost a sort of subtype of grinding would be farming to an extent that, like, so I remember in Kingdom Hearts 1, there's an optional boss where you fight Sephiroth. Mm-hmm. And he's got this move that he can do. I don't know if it's based on something from Final Fantasy, where he can knock all of your health down to 1 HP in mm-hmm. a single... He just sort of says a word, and he doesn't even have to touch you. He's on the other side of the arena, and he'll just do it if you don't interrupt him.
Yeah.
All your HP will go to 1, and all your MP will go to 0, so you can't use your cure spell on yourself either. So you've got 1 HP, and you've got no magic to cure yourself. So the best thing to do is to go into that fight with loads and loads of elixir potions, which will fill up your health and magic if you use one. Mm-hmm. So I did a big old grind or farm for money / elixir potions if they were dropping, or money to buy them from a store somewhere. And I guess in a similar way, going out and just digging for cobblestone in Minecraft, that's in its own way a kind of grind, and I've done plenty of that. So it does partly come down to semantics, I suppose, as well, like how you define it.
It's built into games, though. They
really
get that playtime out of you. As I said, some definitely do it more obviously and worse than others, but it's varying degrees of is this a chore?
Yeah.
Question mark. So.
Yeah. Well, it's time for a new section, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. It's not a new section at all. I've just realized we do this every week.
What?
Do we? Yeah, we do. Yeah.
I've never seen this before.
Well, you might when I say it.
About.
It's called What We Play In.
Oh. It's What We Play In time. Time to talk about what we play in. Peter, what are you playing?
I have started Horizon Zero
Dawn. Oh my god!
It's happening. It's happening. Peter's finally working through the games that he's been trying to work through since sort of last year.
Incredible.
Wow, it's a good game, isn't it? I'm really liking it.
Yeah.
So obviously I knew... I've seen bits and bobs of it. I've seen clips, and you know, when you do a list YouTube channel or multiple list YouTube channels for the past couple of years, you do pick these things up over time, either through stuff that you're presenting or stuff that other people have done on the channel that you're watching. So I obviously knew sort of what it looked like. I knew the vague design of the world, the overall aesthetic of the kind of tribal / mechanical things. I knew a little bit about Aloy, and I'd seen how the game played to a certain extent, but there's nothing quite like being hands-on with a game to get the full experience. So you know, you can sit and watch as many little snippets as you like, but to actually sit down with a controller in hand, man, I've really liked the way that game plays in terms of flow. Because you can kind of take the piss a little bit with how you traverse the landscape. I found myself sprinting and running and rolling over certain sorts of rocks and inclines that I'm not saying I shouldn't have been able to in a real world scenario. Like, I wasn't going up a vertical face or whatever, but other video games would not have let me do what I was doing because they just don't like it when you interact with certain geometry in that way. But you can really just kind of roll around and charge up and down mountains in that game, and it lets you do it, and it handles it really well. And that's a bit of a weird starting point for my discussion as to how I'm finding Horizon, that oh yeah, I can climb up rocks really easily. But I just like the way that I can charge through that thing and not stumble over. But I mean, I'm already really invested in the story. I think I can kind of talk about story for a game that's that old at this point without spoiling it for too many people. I've got to the main little sort of town, ready for the proving. So yep. That's what I'm going to be doing next. Yeah, already I care a lot about these characters. I'm intrigued by the world. I want to know what has happened, both on a personal level to more than one character, and also I want to know how the world got to where it is. You know, I've heard a few little recordings already that I found. You want to know how the world ended up that way. I've got, you know, already just sort of a vague theory that AI and machines just took over the world and thought, hey, this is a good form to take in order to survive well, but you know, there's got to be more nuance to it than that. So it's very exciting, and I'm also killing every single animal that I come across because it's just fun to shoot stuff with bows and arrows in that game,
isn't it?
And when I say animal, I mean like actual real life wildlife. You know, I sometimes avoid the machines because it's just easier. But hey, if I see a turkey, that turkey is going to die.
That's a dead turkey already.
It's a dead turkey right there. Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. Mm-hmm. So really having a good time already. And I've not actually played that much this week. So can't wait to sit down and play some more.
Excellent.
And I think outside of just sort of streaming things and so on, that's the only thing I've played. Just on and off throughout the week. So
nice.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice.
What about you? What are you playing?
I played Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game.
Ah, happy anniversary.
The re-release. Thank you. I loved the film when it came out 10 years ago.
I loved
the game when it came out 10 years ago as well. Obviously got into the game because of the movie. And while the game is based more on the comic, or the graphic novel, I should say, that the movie is based on, than the movie, there's definitely similarities in like character design and how they were portrayed in the, like how things were portrayed in the movie definitely influences the game as well. So if you're not familiar with it, it's a side-scrolling beat-em-up up to four players where you can play as Scott and his friends. And this version is a re-release because it was taken down from various storefronts and stuff and started to disappear, which is really sad. And it includes all the DLC, so you can play as Knives and Wallace as well. So there's a couple of extra characters. You level up as you go, you collect money from beating up baddies, and you can level up certain stats and stuff with the money. You can buy things, and it's all very funny, and the art style is really, really nice. The music's incredible. Done by Anamanaguchi, which is a band that makes all their music with the chip tunes and the blip blops and the beep boops. And,
yeah.
It's really good. I really loved that game back in the day.
It's a very pretty game. I sat and played it with you for sort of one sitting, I think.
Did we? Did we play that at one point?
Definitely. I can't remember what for, but like that's the only time I would have ever played it, and I remember playing it. Might have been at What Culture, actually. It might not have been at your flat. I can't remember if it was at your place or if it was for a video somewhere, like a stream, but...
Yeah, I don't think we streamed it. It must have just been for fun. I must have just had my PS3 in the living room or something, because, I've had it just installed on my PS3, I think, ever since, because it's disappeared, and now it's back, finally. It's the PS4/current-gen version, so I played it on PS5. Through backwards compatibility, and it's now got online support as well. The online does not work at all, and I kept crashing out of people's games and getting disconnected, and people would join and things wouldn't load properly, so a bus would come onto the screen, and the bus is meant to come onto the screen and then drive off and reveal a load of enemies that it's dropped off, but the bus arrived and it would never move again, and it's just like weird stuff like that. So the online does not work currently, which is a real shame.
Right.
And I hope they patch that. But obviously local multiplayer is fine. I play through the whole thing on my own. It's really bloody difficult to start with. You get the crap beaten out of you all the time. And it's only when you start to level up and buy certain power-ups that permanently buff your chosen character that you actually start to succeed. Because it really is... you do just get the crap beaten out of you to begin with, and it is, there's a brick wall in that sense. But if you persevere and just sort of grind, maybe.
Yes.
And go collect some currency, you can then start to see some results. And there's lots of guides online about, you know, what you should spend your money on and stuff. But I really, really enjoyed playing that through. I did it last weekend, and it brought back a lot of memories. Just sat there getting quietly frustrated, and then feeling, you go from being massively underpowered to being a god very quickly in that game. So that was nice. It was nice to experience that game again and own it again after so long.
Lovely.
Yeah, such a lovely game. Played some more Zombies. Really enjoying Zombies. Zombies is the new Warzone for my friends and I. We're always playing Zombies now, so that's fun. Valhalla. Assassin's Creed Valhalla. My frustrations and hang-ups on Ubisoft open world games are well known on this podcast.
Yeah.
And this is the first Assassin's Creed game I've played. Well, it's certainly the first one I've played since they made all those big sweeping changes with Odyssey and Oranges. Remember Oranges? The one set on the fruit? Assassin's Creed Oranges?
Oh, yeah, of course. Assassin's Creed Oranges. It's a good one.
There are sphinxes in it, but it's also about oranges.
You just go around making Tropicana.
Tropicana.
Yum, yum.
Delicious. So much sugar, though.
Yeah.
It's just sad. Anyway... So they've RPG-ified it a lot since then, and this is my first experience with that. I dabbled with, let's see, I platinumed Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood, and Revelations. Then I played Assassin's Creed 3, and I didn't like it, but I finished it. And then I played Assassin's Creed 4, which is a lot of people's favorites, and I just couldn't get into it. And since then, I've not been interested in Assassin's Creed.
Right.
And that was also around the time that, you know, Far Cry 4 came out, and it was basically more of Far Cry 3. And I really started to see the pattern emerging in how Ubisoft designed their games. And I was like, I'm just not getting anything out of these anymore. And I don't enjoy it. So this is me giving it another go. And on the whole, I quite like it. I have some real frustrations with it. As I mentioned earlier, I don't like the fact that things are gatekept from me immediately. It's sort of like, I'm here now. I'm a Viking, and I'm here now. Can I please raid? No, you cannot. You must not raid.
You will die.
You will die. You're a Viking, and you will die. I'm enjoying the power fantasy of you know, walking into a room in a cutscene and everyone going, Eivor, you Tony Robinson-sounding rascal. He does sound like Tony Robinson a bit to me, and it's that accent for some reason.
Really
reminds me of Time Team, yeah.
I mean, I've almost forgotten exactly how his voice goes now. It's been a couple of weeks since I last heard it, so
yeah,
I'll have to maybe watch a clip.
There's just something about it that reminds me of Tony Robinson. But yeah, everyone's like, oh, here he is. Here's the guy who likes to kill everyone. I'm like, yeah, that's me. It's Tony. It's time to consult the geofizz.
Yeah.
And see where this bloody... The door's barred, is it, from this side? Well, how the hell do I get in? Because there's no windows on this longhouse, whatever it is, you know? Can't get in. So I like that. I really like the setting of England. I find that really interesting. And seeing all the Roman structures still there, albeit in ruins, is fascinating. Like, it's a really pretty game. And it gives me big Witcher 3 vibes in that sense. Just very lush and vibrant and orange and green. And, you know, it's just a very, very good-looking game. I'm not a fan of the leveling up system. You know, spend a skill point and get 2.5% extra stealth that. Like, I don't care about that. That's rubbish. I hate that. That's really meaningless. I was also, up until I actually started to level up a bit, not a fan of the combat either. Because I just felt like I was getting killed a lot. And I don't like the fact that the dodge and roll is square instead of circle, because they can't map two things to the same button.
Yeah, I think I changed my shoulder button controls in that game as well, because I didn't like the way... I think it was the way the bow is controlled. I think I switched that round, but yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of that. It's growing on me now that I'm getting used to it, but I know there's lots of different weapon types, and I am trying to experiment with them, but I just wasn't really enjoying that. I also found the stealth not very good. I just found myself getting caught really easily all the time. Like, I'd put my cloak up and I would walk through a town where it says, you're not trusted. And then they would immediately all spot me and my hood would just come down and be like, oh, okay. All right, looks like we're fighting. It's probably because you don't have enough 1% increases to your stealth.
But I'd be walking, like, you know, my thumbstick barely even leaning forward at all. I've got a hood up and I'm trying to just blend in. Like the game tells you to right at the start. It's like if you put your hood up and walk, you'll blend in. Mm-hmm. And then I just slowly see like a bar increase and increase and increase. And it's like, no, they've seen me. They've seen me.
Yeah.
And then I have to sprint out of the town again and reset.
So the hidden blade is pretty much useless to me.
Mm.
And as has been seemingly increasingly the case with Assassin's Creed over the years, the assassin's part is becoming less relevant.
Yeah.
And it's becoming more annoying that it's even there. You know, I've done my bit where I was pulled out of the Animus to walk around my little hut
in
America. And it's just like,
tedious.
I hate this. I don't want this. I just want to be a Viking. So is a Viking game where you're not doing any assassinating or sneaking, it's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's the level of detail that only the sort of the manpower or woman power and other power that Ubisoft and their vast network of studios can pull off. You know, that level of detail in the open world is really impressive.
Mm.
And I am, for my own sanity, to try and get through this game because I don't like the amount of things that are on the map. I still don't like how they do that. It's just too much. And it's all there all the time, and I don't like it. And so I am mainlining this game.
Right.
I am getting in my boat, and I am just traveling to the objective. And if there's any raids to do on the way, I will do them. And that's it. And that's all I'm doing. And that is the way that I'm enjoying this game so far. But given that they are also selling one of those bloody things, you know, that like they did for Odyssey quite infamously, where, like an accelerator pass that you can buy so you can level up quicker. Like that's just, they're solving a problem that they've created by making their games too big. And if I reach a point where the main story says, right, main story suggested power level for this is 120 and you're only level 70, it's at that point, going back to our first question, that grinding may put me off a game. Because I'm not spending money and I'm also not going to run around the map collecting treasures and doing side quests and stuff because I just don't, there's just too much of it and it will, I will be playing this game forever and I don't want to be doing that. So on the whole, as a Viking game set in an interesting setting, very pretty, I'm enjoying it. But the fact that all the baggage that comes with it being part of the Assassin's Creed series is what's putting me off it, which is what I always knew it would do. But I'm hoping I can get through this game to the end. I hope. I'm going to try.
It's what put me off, because I think I knew that I could sit and continue to play it now at the moment if I really wanted to. But for one thing, I had other games calling to me that I kind of wanted to play more or had been wanting to play for longer. And I knew that even though I do currently have the patience to continue with it now, I don't think I would have the patience to complete it. So I almost kind of thought, well, if I'm not going to complete it anyway, you know, if I'd rather just like tap out now and come back to it later, I may as well, because I'm not going to finish it on this run either way. So, you know, if I want to go and play Horizon instead, I've got a taste for this game. I've enjoyed exploring the world. I've done some like side questy things and collectible things. I've done some main questy things. But, you know, I too found it. I thought it was a bit contrived how they made it an Assassin's Creed game by having, this is a really minor spoiler, but like, or just the way that he acquires the hidden blade.
Yeah.
Because of course a Viking wouldn't have a hidden blade, but conveniently he ends up with one through a story piece that happens.
A guy.
And of course, cutting out of the Animus and having to wander around in America, I just thought was like, one of the last Assassin's Creed games I played seriously was Syndicate. Mm. And I seem to remember that game not actually having any playable bits outside of the Animus. I think it was always a cutscene. So you could just kind of, I can't remember if it let you skip it. It probably did. But if not, you could just kind of zone out and think, all right, well, soon this cutscene will be done and I'll be back in the Animus again and continuing. Mm. It didn't make you, the moment it gave me control outside of the Animus, I was like, flip this. Like, I do not want anything to do with this story arc. I don't know what has happened up to this point. Apparently, we're in some sort of post-apocalypse, seemingly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, dystopia anyway. And I just have no interest at all in that. And, yeah.
I want to live in Viking Britain.
I do.
That's what I signed up for.
Mm.
And I like it. So, there we go. There's sort of like a mini Assassin's Creed review discussion there.
Yeah, we didn't actually do a thing on it, did we? We didn't.
I think maybe just because it was after the fact, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was sort of a little
not
while
really
after
much
launch.
Point.
But there you go. On the whole, I am liking it. Like, I will echo what I've always said about Assassin's Creed games, is that I don't think they're bad. They're just not for me.
Yeah.
And the same things that have always put me off are definitely still present here. But I think there's a lot to be said for the strength of and the quality of the world that they've created that actually I want to keep playing it and persevere and see where it goes. So I will report back. But God, the hours just... You just have to pour a lot of hours into that game. I've already put like 11 hours into that game.
Yeah, I just didn't want to do it anymore.
It just keeps racking up and up and up. And I hope that the story quests keep a rolling on through rather than, okay, I've got the equivalent of the Spider-Man games where it's like, I've got some time to kill. I should go on patrol.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, now go do side quests for 12 hours. No, I don't want to. I really don't want to do that. Please let me experience this story a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So we will see. Anyway, that's what I've been playing. We've got a question, Peter, from Big the Cat.
Yes,
who asks, what is the best way a game has incorporated respawning into the story, e.g. kindling a fire in Dark Souls and repatriation in Death Stranding?
It's a good question. I like this question. Thank you, Big the Cat.
What are the best death explanations that you've had?
I've got a really weird one, but I think it kind of divides the audience. Some people thought it was just completely confusing and strange. I think it was fun, at least, and different. It was very different. And it kind of worked in universe, which was the one in the original Prey, or Prey 1, if you want to get serious about this.
Yeah.
Did you ever play... Well, I know you didn't play that game, but are you aware of what the respawning was like in that
game?
No,
I know very little apart from the fact that you played as a Native American, is that right?
Well, exactly, yeah. So you played as a Native American and you end up on a sci-fi spaceship. So it's mostly a science fiction game where you've got, you know, the ship is a sort of weird mixture of metal spaceship and also horribly organic. Like there's sort of pipes coming out of the wall that end with sort of sphincters and things. It's really gross. Yeah. And all the weapons are like that too.
Right.
But when you die in that game, you suddenly end up with it completely pulls the rug from under you in terms of genre and theme and aesthetic. And you end up in the Native American spirit world with a ghost bow and arrow in your hand. And there's all these birds, ghost birds, flying around on sort of in the distance. And you have to shoot down spirit birds, and then their spirits kind of come into you. And I think that is sort of like it's sort of reanimating you. You're kind of gathering spirit energy. I don't remember the exact sort of terminology they use or anything like that, but it was very strange. Like you would die, and suddenly you're on this like rock floating in just a complete empty void, and you have to shoot all these like falcon eagle things as they fly around. And I think as the game gets harder, that mini game in itself gets slightly more difficult as well, in that there's like smaller rocks floating in the sky that the birds sometimes like are behind, so you have to, it's just like slightly harder to shoot them. But yeah, it's a really weird thing. But it sort of works in universe in that, you know, I guess it's kind of part of his spirituality and his belief system that, you know, there's this other plane out there. As I say, I'm probably butchering something that either is a genuine part of Native American culture, or I'm implying that it is when it actually isn't. And both of those things are probably slightly disrespectful. But, you know, it was a very strange but interesting mechanic. I remember in Prince of Persia Sands of Time, do you remember what would happen when you died in that game? You would like, so you would like fall off a cliff,
mm-hmm.
and the prince, he narrates that whole game. So in cutscenes, he would say like, you know, I made my way up to the balcony and I spoke to the person who was there. But if you would fall down a cliff or something, he would go, no, wait, no, sorry, that's not how it happened. Let me go back a bit. So he would just sort of say, like, no, wait, that, no, 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 that's not what happened. And he would just backtrack. I think even when he tried to quit out of the game, he would say, like, oh, but I've not finished my story. You sure you want me to go? And then you would say yes, and go, all right then. So it's just sort of strangely narrated, cool, the entire thing. But it was pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun when a game can tie its sort of the respawning and death into its world and its narrative like that.
Yeah,
and
not like every Bioshock, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Vita Chambers in Bioshock is another great one. But not every game can do that, obviously. It wouldn't make contextual sense for Joel from The Last of Us to fall off a roof or something and then suddenly come back. You know, there'd be no in-universe. So they're, for a lot of games, their only choice is to just put mission failed or game over, reload last checkpoint. Like that, obviously, you know, you have to do that. I always liked how Pokemon did it, where you don't really get a game over, or you don't, obviously, they don't die either. You black out and you wake up at the Pokemon Center, and the Pokemon Center obviously serves a very valid purpose, but it's not like you have to reset to your latest save or a checkpoint. It's just the last Pokemon Center you visited is the one that you respawn at. But all the Pokemon that you've captured are still there. Your Pokemon are still the same level. All the trainers you've defeated up until the point where you lost are still there, if indeed it was a trainer you lost to and not just a wild Pokemon. Apart from the Pokemon League, obviously, where you have to start again if you lose. But I always liked how it did that. It just made sense. Made sense in the world. Bloodborne and Dark Souls and those sorts of games do it very well. They tie it into the fact that you are the chosen undead, for example, in Dark Souls, and varying, you know, variations of that across the different Dark Souls games, where you are, when you die, you come back as like a, you know, like bacon babs. You just all you're all shriveled and pink and
delicious
until you regain your humanity. And the same goes for Demon Souls. Obviously, you're trapped in the Nexus. Your spirit is trapped in the Nexus. So every time you die, you cannot die. You just come back to the Nexus, or you know, whatever. And Bloodborne, of course, you're tied to the Hunter's Dream, where you awaken in the waking world, and because of that, when you die, you're still in the dream. So you can't really die until the game is done. Which is, you know, fun. It's fun how it does it. I like how Assassin's Creed as well explains it away, where it says desynchronized when you die.
Yeah,
that's one of the perks of the Animus stuff. Is like, oh yeah, none of this is real.
You sort of ended up on the wrong timeline, or your memory is incorrect here.
So you come back and stuff. So there's lots of cool things that games do to explain that stuff. I think similarly to Prey. I can't really remember it because it was 2014 now, but Shadow of Mordor, the Lord of the Rings game, when you die, I think you sort of talk to the ghost elf who's inside you, Troy Baker, the ghost elf.
The ghost inside my whatever he is.
Yeah, who sort of scolds. Yeah. Oh no, Troy Baker plays the main character, I think. I can't really remember anything about that game. People loved it. I wasn't a big fan of it. Anyway, the point is, I think you have sort of a chin wag and then you come back. And of course, Sekiro, you can die twice. You can just get up off the floor. Lots of cool stuff.
Yeah. I was just thinking then, I don't know if, I mean, at the time I didn't really question it, but I don't know if I actually like the way that GTA does it when I think about it, or certainly the older games. So you would either, if you got busted after going on an absolute rampage, just thousands dead, you would then just be like deposited at the police station as though they'd like taken you in, given you a little slap on the wrist and then said, right, be on your way.
Imagine if it was realistic.
Yeah. Well, I know, I'm not suggesting you should then have to sit in prison for the next 60 years, but you know, it should almost, I almost kind of wish it would just game over you and send you back to a checkpoint. In a way, I think that would be more realistic than saying, right, off to the police station with you, but I don't do it again. Or if you get wasted, you would end up at the hospital. But this is America, ladies and gentlemen. Surely you should take a massive monetary
That's true.
Hit if you end up at the hospital. I don't know.
Very true.
Just an idea. So I think you'll find that that's not very accurate.
No,
the way
it takes
that they
me
do
out
that
of the experience with the jetpacks and the flying
as
the
I
planes
say,
through the
at
city.
The time, It certainly didn't take me out of the experience, but you know, just thinking about it,
yeah,
it almost doesn't fit with the in-universe lore.
No, it doesn't. Maybe we'll see a change in GTA 6.
Yeah,
who knows if they ever release that? I don't think they will, but we'll see. Peter, it's time to move on.
Yes,
to a section that is a bit strange.
Yes, it is.
Do you have your paper?
I've got. I've moved on my desk. Yes, I've got some here.
Excellent.
Yes. Yep, I've got my paper.
It's time for weird news.
Weird news.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. Peter, what have you got?
I've got some weird news from Kotaku today, because where else? You know, they're very good at weird news over at Kotaku. This is Ian Walker, who has done an article entitled "Mortal Kombat Player Disqualified from Tournament for Criticizing Developers."
Oh.
Okay. Oh, no. During an official Mortal Kombat 11 Pro competition, spelt with a K, nice.
Yeah.
Tournament on January the 16th, finalist Titanium Tigers, with two Zs on the end, was disqualified after jokingly calling out developer NetherRealm Studios by labeling his Shiva variation, a personalized moveset that displays a custom name to opponents, as "Why did NRS do this?" Right?
Right.
So the disqualification made for an awkward moment on the stream. When the official broadcast cut away from the top eight match after just a few minutes, commentators Husam Mitsunez Sharif and Miguel Darth Armor Perez were left fumbling for words to explain what happened. "Unfortunately, it looks like we have a little problem here and someone is being... We got a situation," Perez told viewers, while he and his partner appeared to listen to producers in their headphones. "I don't know what we can publicly say, but we definitely have a situation here." Shortly after, Perez said that Titanium Tiger's opponent would be advancing, despite the match having not been officially decided. No reason was given, but Perez went on to remind everyone to abide by the rules, everybody's gotta be respectful, implying that that was the reason Titanium Tigers had been disqualified without coming out and saying so. NetherRealm Studios and parent company Warner Brothers Games have not responded to Kotaku's request for comment. The variation name Titanium Tigers... The variation name, Titanium Tigers, told Kotaku, was supposed to be a very mild criticism of Shiva's strengths. "It was meant to be funny, since the character I was using is basically extremely easy," Titanium Tigers explained to me via DM. "The joke was, why would they make such an easy character? Shiva has been a hot topic in MK lately due to her dragon drop stomp attack," which apparently is, like, almost unblockable. Right. Titanium Tigers and his opponent weren't told about the disqualification immediately and continued playing their set off stream for a few minutes. After being notified, he was allegedly left in the dark as to why he'd been disqualified and wasn't given a chance to rectify or challenge the situation. "They banned me in the very first match where I used the name," he said. "No opportunity to change the name was given and no one reached out to me. I'd have changed it instantly if I'd been given the option."
Wow.
While the official pro competition rules don't specifically mention these kinds of protests, the Code of Conduct section does give organisers discretion to disqualify players for just about any reason, it says.
Brilliant.
And it's massively backfired because then in the MK community on Twitter, hashtag why did NRS do this was trending like wildfire. So,
way to go, guys.
It went well.
Absolutely smashed it.
So there you go. People can just get banned from the competition for doing a joke name.
Excellent. What a welcoming community.
Yeah.
Or welcoming management, I should say. Who'd have thought management for a video game series where you could rip out spines and stuff would be quick to judge?
Yeah, they're really offended and upset by that.
Yeah, that's strange. Anyway, weird. How weird?
Weird news.
Very weird news.
It's time for some weird news from you, Ben.
Yes, we're going to PCGamer.com.
Ooh, okay.
That's Natalie Clayton,
mm-hmm.
who's posted about the Bloodborne PSX game. I was going to read the title, but how I started that sentence wouldn't have made any grammatical sense. The title is, Bloodborne PSX is a lo-fi demake of the From Software slasher.
Yeah, I saw this, and for a minute I thought it was Nightmare Creatures when I was watching it. And I was like, hang on, This isn't Nightmare Creatures. I've not read about it, though, so tell me more.
Okay, here we go. 5 years on, and a Bloodborne PC release still only looks marginally more likely than it did on day one. But while From Software's best game remains locked down on Sony's hardware, developer Lilith Walter's crunchy 90s demake of the gore-soaked Monster Hunter looks like one hell of an alternative. Okay, yes, it's called Bloodborne PSX, but no one's going to be playing through this lo-fi hunter's dream on old PlayStations. So,
I would.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, I hope that this gets fully released so I can stream it.
Yeah.
Because obviously they're not going to print it to discs because of all of the legal issues.
But it might be playable on... Like, they might be able to release an ISO to make it work on an emulator. I don't know how they're actually developing it there. So.
No, me neither. So there's a tweet here from... who was it? Let me just check the name. I've lost it. Where are you?
Oh,
Lilith.
No.
Lilith. Mm-hmm. Of Lilith, a video of the game running, and it looks fantastic. Like it's so blocky and angular,
murky.
And the hunter looks amazing. Mm. Like the hunter design that you play as looks really good. You've got the saw blade there. They've got like the wolf dog men people running around. Lots of missing assets and stuff. But as a sort of proof of concept, it looks amazing.
Yeah,
it looks so cool. For the past few weeks, Walter's feed has been steadily granting a peek into a world where Bloodborne comes out in 1995, not 2015. It's a little blockier, the environment's a little more barren, and it's all very work in progress so far. But the core of the game, that is, battering nightmare dogs with a rusty saw, is all there in its 420p glory. Developed using the Unreal Engine, Walter's demake isn't strictly a snapshot of what Bloodborne would look like in the mid-90s, but it's convincing, with enough of the same graphical quirks and crunchy textures to pull at the nostalgia of anyone with a fondness for that era. An impressive project in its own right, Bloodborne PSX also stands in conversation with a wider movement to bring back the wobbly vertices and fog-drenched environments of early 3D games, a movement that, through games like Paratopic?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe? And the haunted PS1 label recognizes the visual style's ability to create powerfully unsettling spaces.
Mm.
So I think we had a conversation about this in the past, didn't we? About how what is considered a retro aesthetic for a game.
Yeah.
And how usually people just go for 8-bit or 16-bit pixel art. Whereas, you know, PS1's designs and aesthetics are unique in their own right and evoke their own feelings.
Yeah, I think I mentioned actually there's a YouTube channel of a guy who's doing a similar project. I think it's called Cyrides with a Y in it, C-Y-R-E-I-D-E-S, I think, something like that. Originally, he was doing a Spyro fan project in the graphical style of Spyro. He then got like a cease and desist, so he had to rebrand the whole thing. And now it's basically the same thing, but it's all just sort of been asset swapped for a new character, like a flying squirrel thing. Right. He also recently just did a little extra project for like a Halloween themed game with this kid with like a little torch that's going around a haunted house. And he did an opening cutscene for it as well. And it's all done in that style, and it really does like awaken something in you. Like, you would think that your nostalgia for games like that is the nostalgia is for the games, not and that just seeing the art style somewhere else for a game you've never played before wouldn't necessarily make you feel anything in particular, but there is something about that, you know, seeing completely new content but in that visual style that really does I think if you're fond of that era, it really is very appealing. So, you say, or as the article says, there's also something about that style that, especially with the fog and sort of horrible, disgusting textures, can really make something spooky. It can really add to horror. I think it's partly why Resi and Silent Hill were so successful back then, is because it just worked, you know?
Absolutely. I agree. I think we've had a similar discussion about how that extends to... There's a contingent of people who believe that horror movies are best experienced on VHS for that same reason, because of the clarity of DVD and Blu-ray and so on, and digital media, 1080p, 4K. Something is lost by having a murky, warped VHS to watch a horror film on. You can see everything. Everything's clear. There's no nuance. And I think, it's similar. It's similar to this. And it's cool, like because when you think of games that look like that, you don't necessarily think of refined control schemes or excellent gameplay mechanics. Not saying that they don't exist, but the idea of a game built to modern standards that looks like that is very appealing.
Yeah.
Be cool. Yeah. I'd play that.
Mm.
So there's my weird news.
Oh, that's the end of the article there. All right. Yeah. Excellent.
The next question, Peter, is actually from a different person. I got the name wrong.
Oh. It's on the document.
On the document, yeah. It's from the Jonin Cactar, I think.
Well, actually, just before we got to that,
yeah.
I'm going to come out of Miller's voice because it's going to be a long couple of sentences. I just wanted to... There was a story that I nearly brought along today by Luke Plunkett, but I didn't bring it along because basically the entire story is in the headline, so I thought there would be no point reading out the full article. But it's Luke Plunkett, Kotaku. I'll just read you the headline because then I've literally covered it anyway. Man fined $270 for breaking lockdown to play Pokemon Go.
Excellent.
It's even better than that in that they've done a conversion there, and it's actually a man in England who was fined £200. He took a 25-minute drive between Bedworth and Kenilworth, and the police caught him and fined him.
What an idiot. Go.
Yeah. Thank you, Luke Plunkett.
For God's sake.
So from the Jonin Cactuar.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Do you think, as PlayStation boys, you both miss out on a lot of critically acclaimed indie games? I recently played Return of the Obra Dinn and Outer Worlds for the first time. What did I just say? Worlds. Yeah.
Yes. They came out at the same time as well, which is pretty
confusing. They did. I remember that at the time was a bit confusing. And Outer Wilds for the first time, and immediately understood the praise they both received. I played them on PC, though, and I've always been under the impression that while these games get console releases, they fly under the radar a lot more amongst the exclusives and the AAA titles when they're released on console. Also, Outer Wilds flies under the radar of the Outer Worlds, potentially, or vice versa, so... Yeah,
absolutely. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one because they don't get publicized. Obviously, they don't get publicized as much as Spider-Man Miles Morales, for example. And the PC space, while a lot of games are exclusive to PC in that they're just developed for PC and that's it, PC isn't a manufacturer or a publisher in the same way that Sony or Microsoft or Nintendo are. So they're sort of completely different setups. However, if you are remotely plugged into games, full stop, you are aware of the big names in prominent indie titles and stuff. You know of them.
Yeah.
And while not all of them get console ports, the Switch is doing a very, very good job of that. Mm. But while they don't all get console ports to PlayStation 4 or 5, for example, it generally comes down to being more of a case of interest versus time to play them.
Exactly.
You know? Like, I know of both of these games. I'm fairly sure. I don't know about the Obra Dinn, but I do know Outer Wilds is definitely on PlayStation. But I just haven't had the time to play them, and I've had other games that I would prefer to play. And it's not necessarily about missing out because I'm on console. It's missing out because I don't want to or haven't played them, and that's it.
That's my exact answer as well. It's just that, you know, I mean, I'm not hugely into indie games anyway. I know that's a bit of a generalized statement, because the indie game, as we know, just means it's been made by an indie developer, and it can be anything. It could be a driving game, a puzzle game, a roguelike. It could be any. So, you know, to say that I'm not into indie games is a bit of a silly thing to say, but the point is that if there were any indie games that I did like the look of, I mean, for one thing, I've got a PC, so if they were PC exclusives, I could play them anyway. But even in the case of those that, as the questioner mentioned, who was it again? We've got the wrong name written down.
It's the Jonin Cactar.
Oh yes, of course. You know, some of them do come to console, but they do sort of fly under some people's radar. You know, I think number one, being plugged into being interested in gaming news at all, you do tend to see these things around. And then also, obviously, in our job, we see them as well as part of our coverage of the likes of E3 and so on. Mm-hmm. So I don't think anything really major flies under our radar, personally, for us. I don't know about other people who are PlayStation gamers who aren't in this kind of job. But it's more of a case of whether I've got the time to play those sorts of games on top of everything else. I mean, I barely have time. It's no secret I barely have time to even play mainstream stuff lately. So, you know, I'm not really going to be able to find the time to play indie stuff. But certainly, if anything tickled my fancy, I would give it a go. You know, I'm still thinking eventually I might play... Oh, I've forgotten the name of it now. There's like a top-down kind of real-time strategy city builder game that starts in prehistoric times. It's about to get an upgrade, I think, as well. But I'll have to look it up now. There are some sort of smaller games that I would absolutely give. Oh, Humankind, it's called.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I try games as and when I want to, but it's a question of time sometimes.
Absolutely, and I think, if you were to sit down someone who literally boots up their PlayStation or their Xbox One, PS4, Xbox One, and just plays the games that they've got access to, or just goes on the PlayStation Store or the, you know, XBLA or whatever that's called now, and, you know, scrolls. Is it still XBLA? Or is it just a store now? I don't know.
I don't know.
It used to be the Live Arcade, that didn't it?
Feels like a very old phrase, doesn't it?
It does. They can't still be using that. I have no idea. I've never really been on Xbox. Well, since Xbox 360, very briefly. So I don't.
Also, I should say it's Dawn of Man, not Humankind.
Oh, Dawn of Man. Okay.
Yeah, Humankind is the other one that's coming out soon, but Dawn of Man is the one that's been out for a while.
Gotcha. But we're not doing a very good job of being convincing here, are we?
We're clued into indie games.
The point that we're trying to make is that if you were to get someone to boot up their PS4 or their Xbox One, and that's all they do, they just boot it. They don't follow internet news or stuff like that. And they just go to the store, see what's available, and they just see the big adverts for Destiny 2 and stuff. They're probably not going to know about the new indie games. But likewise, if you've just got someone who boots up their PC and goes to Steam, they may not also know about those games. They're far more likely to be prominently featured than on consoles. But I think it's when it comes to independent games, by their very virtue, they are smaller than AAA games. There is an element of knowledge that is required to actually even be aware of them, and that doesn't that stretches far beyond playing on PC. If you just follow games, you know about these games, even if you can't play them. You know, it's not it doesn't make you sort of you don't get elevated access or privileges just by playing on PC. I would say, you know, you don't get special knowledge. That's not how it works.
No, it yeah, people are still generally, if they want to be informed, they will be informed, sort of
thing. Absolutely. And indie games are great as well. I do love an indie game. And I have been meaning to play Outer Wilds as well. But again, it's just time. You know, I don't have the time to do it when I've got Assassin's Creed Valhalla to get angry at, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Is Little Devil Inside indie? I'm just looking it up now.
That was a Kickstarter game that's upset a lot of people, I think. Because
why is it upset people?
People Kickstarted it or GoFunded it or whatever it was, and now PlayStation's publishing it, I believe.
Yeah, I'm just checking.
Citation needed, and I think some of the backers are annoyed about that.
At the moment, on the Wikipedia page, it's saying developed and published by NeoStream Interactive.
Oh, okay, maybe
but
not.
That might not be up to date. So, but you know, that's it's certainly it's indie style. I would say you look at that and it feels like an indie game, and you know that's an example of a game that I'm certainly intrigued by, and I will play. Whether or not it's technically indie at this point, I don't know. But you know, it certainly serves as an example to show that those games do come along. We are aware of them, and if we want to play them, we will, and I will be.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Right, it's time to move on.
Yeah.
To a big discussion.
Big discussion.
Big discussion time. It's time for the big discussion. The big discussion comes from Trevor Price, who says, "Hi, guys. I've been playing my new Xbox Series S. It's fantastic for the price, but I do worry about the long-term value of the digital consoles. Will these hold their value or simply be bargain bin rubbish in several years' time? I've also dug out my original Xbox over Christmas to play Revenge of the Sith and am reminded of the value the disc versions keep. Thanks, Boston and Petila.
Petila. Yeah, I don't know where the L comes from. I was reading that before we... like yesterday when you sent this over, and I was like, where's the L in Petila from? Because neither of our names have L's in them.
Yeah, it just looks like it's your name twice.
Yeah.
I'm barely present there.
Yeah.
Thanks, Trevor.
Benly present. So this is something, an aspect of this question we have touched on before, which is that physical stuff is great in that, you know, it lasts. You can play it whenever you like. You don't have to worry about servers going dead. Well, I mean, you do, depending if it's a later game. If we're not talking about PS1, PS2 era, there are games now that are considered old that have been affected by servers no longer being online. But certainly going back a couple of generations, you know, if you're playing Revenge of the Sith or the likes of that, you know, over Christmas... I played some PS2 stuff instead of PS5 just to have a little break or a little change. And there's huge value there. And as far as I'm aware, all of the discs that I own from the late 90s and early noughties still run, because I've always kind of been fairly respectful of my discs and put them straight back in the box. They don't seem to be too badly scratched up. So it's pretty crazy that something I bought that long ago still runs. So in terms of value... you know, probably only paid 20 or 30 quid for those games at the time, if you adjust for inflation. And wow, that's fantastic. But you do have to wonder or worry potentially about the future value or the ongoing value of a digital-only console. I think for the very for the foreseeable future, I don't think we need to worry too much about these digital-only versions of consoles becoming bargain bin rubbish. I think they're going to be supported for a very, very long time in terms of you know, games coming out as digital versions on those consoles that can run well enough on the maybe downgraded hardware. And you know, for as long as new games are being released, they will be worthwhile having, especially for people who are on a budget or people who aren't so bothered about having disc copies of things. Also, in the case of the Xbox, who's to say whether even more stuff will gradually be added to that library of games that you can play from Xbox's past? So that only increases in value if they just add more and more over time. I don't think we need to worry too much about digital stuff ending up in a bargain bin anytime soon.
I agree. I don't think those are gonna, you're not gonna, I don't think you're gonna regret buying an Xbox Series S. It is obviously inherently the budget version of the Series X, because even though they both play the same games, obviously it doesn't have a disk drive, which inherently means it just doesn't have as many features, which makes it cheaper, but also means it misses out on features. I think that there's a good chance in the future that when we do move away from physical games, I should say, and we are exclusively digital, then you're not going to worry about, you know, missing out on things, because there's a good chance that we're going to reach a point, if indeed we do get another console generation, which I would assume that we would. We'd get another console generation after this one, maybe. Mm. If we do, will any of them have or play physical media?
I don't know at this point. It's
a good question. And if there's a version that does, will you even be able to play many things on it? Unless that's purely a function for backwards compatibility with previous systems.
Yeah.
So while I would always prefer to get a version that can play the physical media, because I do still enjoy physical media and I like having the games that are important to me there, you know, it's, you reach a point where, God, does it really matter that much? Especially if you've got your old system, you know, as Trevor does.
True, yeah.
For example, on PlayStation, there are the backwards compatibility situation is not good. Mm. You can play PS4 games on PS5. On PS2, you could play PS1 games. On PS3, you could play PS1 games. And if you have the launch model, you could play PS2 games, most of them, not all of them. And that's it. And PS3 games are just stranded on the PS3. You can't play them unless you have a PS3. So, like, I've spoken about before, like, if when it comes down to it, I don't really use backwards compatibility at all. You know, not more recently than PS4 games, which luckily PS5 plays. But that's only because PS4 games are still coming out.
Yeah.
You know? And it's still a relevant platform. But the likelihood of me booting up a PS2 or a PS1 or a PS3, all of which I have in front of my TV, is unlikely. Because I just don't revisit those games very often at all, if ever. It's nice to have the option, but in the long run, I don't think it's that important. And as we move forwards through time, backwards compatibility increasingly is probably going to be the only use of having a console that plays physical media.
Yeah.
Especially as the newer games move increasingly towards digital only. So in its current state, I understand Trevor's concern, but I think in the long run, he's going to be fine. I don't think it's going to make much of a difference, really.
No, I don't think so. If anything, it's the future, whether you want it or not. I think, you know, it's not the case that digital-only consoles will be relegated to obscurity soon if not enough people buy them. I think that, in fact, they're going to be... That's what's going to be coming in the next couple of generations. You know, there'll be no disc trays at all. So, I think there's no concerns there. And people are going to continue to bring out versions that run just as well, relatively speaking, on these slightly slimmed down models of consoles. So it's a good option for people who can't afford to go for the big bucks. And if and when I maybe decide to also get myself an Xbox, because I've still got my old games and I want to play my old games, I'll have to think about whether I want to... I could just get a Series S and just play everything digitally. I don't have to worry about keeping old media.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an option.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, because again, I think it's backwards compatibility is where physical media is going to be important in the future, if it is at all.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to see what Microsoft and Xbox does next as the front runners of backwards compatibility. Obviously on PC, backwards compatibility isn't really an issue at all unless you're trying to play something from Windows 95 and you've got to install a sub-operating system, sort of virtually run it. But I'll be interested to see how Microsoft approaches that concern, because while the Series S is the budget console and it doesn't have a disk drive and so inherently cannot play games backwards through backwards compatibility unless they're digital.
Yeah.
surely it's going to reach a point where they're going to have to address that. Someone's going to have to address that. There was talk when the PSP Go was coming out, which is the digital PSP that doesn't have a UMD drive.
Mm.
There was talk of Sony actively pursuing a system where you could take your UMDs that you physically own and transfer them to digital versions of the games
right.
that you already own. They never did it because obviously that would have been too good and Sony would never give us that because how could they? But also, it seems like a logistical nightmare. But it's probably going to reach a point where that has to be resolved. Someone's going to have to resolve yeah. that issue or come up with a way around it.
Well, or people will just be expected to buy things again. Because if it's in a generation's time, you know, so for now, you've got the option to either play physically or digitally. So if you've mm-hmm. got a load of physical stuff, it's kind of the onus is on you to make sure you buy a version of a console with a disc drive so you can play that stuff. But so I think that kind of covers this generation. But if we go up to another one and everything then is digital, then yeah, Xbox have to ask themselves if we want to still be backwards compatible with the stuff that people already own. Yeah, they will have to think about that. Mm-hmm. And it's tricky in terms of, because what's to stop? I mean, I guess this has always been the case with physical discs, but what's to stop people just handing discs to their friends so they can sort of double scan, you know? So I could own, for example, a copy of like Halo 3. I could give it to you to also just get your own free copy, digital copy of Halo 3 by scanning my disc, you know?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, it's not like they're really missing out on a big sale there, I wouldn't have thought. So I don't know.
No, that's the thing. They would have to be really cynical because they're not making any money from Halo 3 anymore.
Yeah,
presumably.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just like Sony presumably aren't making any money from, what was it, Pursuit Force or something on PSP.
Right.
So what would be the harm of allowing people yeah. to pass one copy around? Because you're not losing any money.
No.
You've already made the sale. You know, you're not going to sell anymore. I think maybe the only way they would do it is by monetizing it and saying you need to pay £1 for
yeah,
every, you know,
for
or something like that.
You do, yeah.
Which would make people very angry, but
it
I don't
would.
Know what else they would do. But that's a way to guarantee that backwards compatibility is not lost on digital consoles going forwards. If indeed we do get another set of consoles in the future. Who knows?
Otherwise, you'll have to buy all those games again on digital, yeah. In digital form, which
absolutely
would wind some people up.
It would. It really would. Well, there we are. That's the end of this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it.
Mm.
And Peter's going to tell you where you can find us and how you can get involved.
Yes, we are putting all of our content out on youtube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. We stream on both of those platforms. And when we do, we are modded by Lob Rotovich, Mads Didactyl, and Trowling Badger. Remember, on Prime, you can use... on Twitch, you can use Amazon Prime to get an Amazon Prime sub, Twitch Prime it's called. So if you've already got Amazon Prime just for, you know, the postage and maybe the rubbish TV, it won't cost you anything extra. It's just part of the deal. You can get a free sub on Twitch with that. We've got social media, twitter.com and facebook.com/TeamTripleJump. Thank you to Luke Eldon for looking after our Facebook for us. Our Patreon is patreon.com/TeamTripleJump. There's lots of different tiers that you can subscribe to there with lots of different kinds of rewards to suit your needs. There is a Discord, bit.ly/TeamTripleJump. We'll send you there. That's modded by Jack and Joe. Thank you, Jack and Joe. The podcast, if you are watching on YouTube right now, is available in audio form at play.acast.com/s/TripleJump. The website is triplej.mup, that's triplju.mp, and if you go to triplej.mup/shop, that will take you to our shop, and if you go to triplej.mup/vods, that will take you to our vods, which have been uploaded onto our YouTube vods channel, and there are some little highlight packages every week there as well. They're done by Pat. Patkages. Thank you, Patkages.
Very good. You can follow Peter on Twitter and Instagram at @PeterAustin and myself just on Twitter at @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday, streams every Monday, Thursday and Friday. Thursday being the joint stream, Blaze It on YouTube. Monday and Friday being the solo streams on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly. Friday for patrons, Sunday for everyone else. The podcast is every Saturday and we do shows one every other week or thereabouts. Leave a review on iTunes, why don't you? Or somewhere else, something to do with algorithms, platform of choice, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Why won't you? Why won't you do it?
Why won't... I don't know.
Why won't you? It's the Worst Games Ever week. That means there's a terrible video game being played coming your way. If you're a patron, you would have already got it on Friday.
It was
but
a good
everybody
one
else will get it on Sunday.
I thought we were on form this week, the two of us.
I agree. Yeah.
It was a typically terrible game, but I think we carried it between us.
On our strong backs.
Yeah, that's right.
Our very strong backs. There's also another launch games video out about the GameCube. The Nintendo... Does that feel good? So go give that a watch. And also... As much a surprise to us as it is to you, despite the fact that we've been doing it for 100 weeks. But episode 100 of this podcast is next week. Tell them, Peter, about all the big grand plans we have.
It certainly snuck up on us. And for that reason, we've basically got no plans whatsoever to do anything special with the episode at all. Partly because we don't really see how the sort of varied format with all of its different segments could be, you know... I was saying to Ben, if we just did a podcast where for half an hour we talked about, say, the latest episode of Great British Bake Off, then for the 100th episode we could do like best ever Bake Off moments and go for an hour. But because there's so much different stuff and different segments in this podcast, how do you do a special, you know? So we welcome you to submit questions that maybe have some sort of relevance to the fact that it's an anniversary episode, or of course just submit entire ideas to us for maybe some sort of slight format change that might be worth doing, because we're kind of stumped, to be honest, as to how to celebrate this.
We're struggling. We have absolutely no idea what to do. If we just proceed with business as usual, but maybe
just a big discussion is something, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we just go, it's episode 100. And then we just continue the episode as normal. No idea. Absolutely no idea what to do. If you have any ideas, please let us know.
Yeah.
We were going to reach out to Luke Plunkett from Kotaku, the chieftain of weird news. But then that seemed like a lot of effort and difficult to explain to him why we wanted him to come on the podcast. So that's been nixed, but let us know what you'd like to see or hear, I suppose. And we'll see if we can make that happen. But there we are, 100 whole episodes. We'll celebrate somehow next week.
Yeah. Also, we believe that Luke Plunkett might be Australian, right?
Yes.
Didn't he used to write for Australia?
I think he's in Australia, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, Kotaku, Australia. So there's a whole time issue there as well with getting a call together. Anyway, there we go. So yeah, let us know either via Patreon in the thread, but then you only have a couple of days before we record, or you know, on social media in those places that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah,
tweet us or whatever.
Tweet us both as well. Tag us in that so we see it. We don't we're not always on the main account.
No. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, that leaves just enough time for me to plug the brand new upcoming game in which you hunt down to punch the third male extra from the Iron Man film, the first one, I should specify. Otherwise, you know, you'd be thinking you're looking for the wrong person.
I thought you meant Iron Man 3 for some reason.
Oh, right. Well, maybe because of the confusion in the name, because it is, of course, called Hit Man 3. It's coming soon. Hit him good.
I can't wait. It's a very exciting time. Hope everyone enjoys it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to those who submitted questions this week. Very much appreciated. And we'll see you next time for episode 100. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.